Hi, everyone. Chick here. Very grateful, recovering nicotine addict. And yes, it's just amazing to me that I'm celebrating another year of recovery. It's not a big milestone. It's just another year. I suppose I should post my time up there so that everyone knows. It's been my birthday week, and it's been filled with all kinds of crazy stuff. But you know what? I have not, and that's all that's important. And I feel very blessed. I feel very blessed to be standing here, sitting here in my recliner with my dog at my side, and being able to flip through all of these names and know that so almost all the people here I have reached out to. Or if nothing else, there's a couple of newer names, people that are relatively new around here that I've been in meetings with. No one is absolutely new to me. And that is such a gift, to be able to share my experience, strength, and hope, and have been a part of every single one of your lives. And I'm not big into getting into my smoking history. I'm going to talk about that very briefly. I've been taught that when you tell your story, you tell what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And I can just share that I started smoking at a very stupid age to start smoking. I had quit drinking in 1988 when I was 37 years old, and with 10 years of recovery, I was a lost soul. Although I did program and service and had a sponsor and did all those things, and I was struggling, and my relationship was going down the tubes, and work was just insane, and I wanted to get the attention of my partner to pay attention to me, and so I started smoking clove cigarettes, as a matter of fact, and it was like a joke type thing, but I got her attention, so I was very happy because I thought it brought us closer. And I'm also someone that, really, as friendly as everyone might think I am, or as outgoing as I appear, I really have great difficulty fitting in. And I really feel I'm usually insecure with people, although I come across like I've known you forever. And the self-esteem issues have always been there. I think that they will always be there for me. And if I smoked, I hung around with people in the other fellowship, because everyone smoked in the other fellowship. And I felt a part of. And I had smoked when I was a young kid. I had smoked along the way, fooling around, to impress my sister-in-law, who I just loved to pieces. I used to smoke before she came to the house and blow the smoke under the door so that she could smell cigarette smoke. And little did I know that when you smoked all the time, you didn't smell cigarette smoke. I mean, that's how together I was. But I, you know, it was an attention-seeking behavior for me. That's it. And I started getting attention at age 47 when I started smoking. And I knew that I could quit whenever I wanted. And 7 years later, when I wanted to quit, I did. It was around this time of year, I think it was March, and I quit. and my nephew had gotten married. Actually, I think it was 9 years ago. And my nephew had gotten married, and there was a lot of friction in the family. He had remarried someone, and I was in his wedding, and I had spent 3 weeks not smoking, and then I was at his house, and I never miss a trick that anyone shares. When people are sharing an uncomfortability, I saw everything that was going on, and he had come back from his honeymoon and bought me a carton of cigarettes from the casino. You know, they went to, and his wife, he says, "Oh, you quit smoking. I'm not gonna give them to you." And I said, "Well, listen, you either give me the cigarettes, I'll just go to the store and buy a carton of my own." So she gave me the cigarettes, and I started smoking right then and there again, because I quit smoking. I could always quit, but it never lasted when stressful situations came. And a year after that, I was very sick. I was getting bronchitis at least once or twice a year. I called them sinus infections, but they were bronchitis. And my doctor was giving me a hard time about my smoking and the bronchitis, and he told me I had to quit. And I told him that, my doctor before that, I told her, "Don't worry about it. My aunt, I have aunts in their 80s and they're still smoking, and a cousin that was, you know, in their late 60s and still smoking, and I was going to continue to smoke also, and so don't waste their time trying to get me to quit." But this male doctor that I got, he really nailed me, and my yoga teacher was nailing me about it, and you know, I quit a second time again, just quit, went 3 weeks. And a family situation arose, and ba-bing-ba-bang, I just went and bought those cigarettes so fast, there was no thinking about it. I knew that if I was going to quit, the only way that I would quit is if I had people with me, like in the other 12-step program that I'm in. I knew with people around, I would do it. But on my own, I knew I wouldn't. And I was told, you know, this woman told me that was a counselor and came to AA, and she said, you know, there's meetings in Albany, which is only 20 minutes away. I just was not. But the second time that I quit and I went back to it and smoked for another year, and I had these two good people in AA who had quit smoking me that nicotine was a drug. And I told them so was food, because they were overweight. So I figured that would get them away from me. But they were trying to, you know, they were trying to help me, because, you know, they knew how serious I was about recovery. But anyway. The third year, I decided I was going to quit. For some reason, I got online and I looked for Smokers Anonymous. And Smokers Anonymous directed me right to Von R somehow. I got on the Nicotine Anonymous website. I ordered the book. I ordered 90 Days and 90 Ways. And I signed into Pal Talk in the middle of February. And I knew I was going to quit. And 7 years ago, this week was my 20th anniversary in AA. And it was a Tuesday night, I believe. And it was snowing like crazy out. And I only had about 7 cigarettes left at 8 o'clock at night. And I was ticked, because that meant I was going to have to go in the snowstorm. And of course, I smoked clove cigarettes, so I had to go, farther away. I had to go 10 miles to get my cigarettes. I wasn't going to, you know, go on my anniversary and smoke crappy cigarettes when I wanted my clove cigarettes. And so I all of a sudden, I got this brainy idea. It was 8 or 9 o'clock at night when I realized I only had 6 or 7 cigarettes left. I said, you know, I quit drinking at 2 o'clock in the morning on the 26th, and this was the 25th. I said, I could do the same thing and make my quit date the same exact time as my quit date of smoking, of drinking. And I made sure I smoked every single one of those last cigarettes, and at about 5:02 in the morning, I lit the last cigarette, and I did look up to the heavens, and I said, well, you better be helping me here, because this is not something I'm going to be able to do alone. And I knew the uncomfortability that was going to follow. And the next morning or afternoon or evening, somehow I was in a pal talk meeting, and John Hippie Dude's voice I remember, and Lynn's voice I remember, and I decided that I was going to blend into the woodwork and not be me, you know. I was going to be quiet and polite and not get involved. I was going to sit back, be lazy, and enjoy myself and let everyone else do all of the work. Because in the other fellowship, I was over my head in service. And the funny part is that I had dial-up Ivanar. And so, whenever I talked, it was always like I was underwater. One of our members calls me Ariel still to this day because I sounded like I was underwater. And I did that for 6 months here. But somehow, I'm a fast typer, and I used to type share a lot. And this guy that used to come to the meetings all the time knew that I understood the steps, which was, and I always talked about the steps. And with, I don't know how much time I had, because I don't know that if we had the 30-day thing yet at that point, but he asked me to co-chair a step meeting with him on Wednesday night at 9 o'clock. And I said I'd love to. Because I loved literature meetings in the other fellowship, and I was kind of disappointed because I didn't see a lot of literature meetings here at all in the month that I came. The second or third day I was here, someone started IMing me, which I had never done an IM ever before in my life on the computer, and I thought, she says, I'm your quit sister, and I'm like, uh-oh, I think she's going to steal my identity. I didn't know what a quit sister was. I didn't know if I wanted to write back. I just, you know, was like, how did she do that? I was like, you know, I had never been in a chat room before. I had never talked to anyone unless I knew them, or even sent emails to people unless I knew them. So this whole medium type thing of the computer was really a challenge for me. But from that minute on, my quit sister and I, became bonded. We not only became bonded, but I became enmeshed with her, which it was one of my character defects that I have worked through in Voices of Nicotine Recovery. And I just was, every time I got on, I was talking with her, I would spend hours. She only stayed here for until the summer. So for about 6 months she did meetings, but we got real, real close. And and then I was consumed with being connected with her. But I also knew enough about recovery that I knew I did not want to pour my stuff into a newcomer's lap. And with a month of recovery, I got a sponsor because I knew that Easter was coming and I had to go to my family's, and that's when I smoked before. So I knew I would smoke at Easter if I did not have a sponsor and someone that I could reach out to as I was with my smoking family. And I did. And I got a sponsor. I had listened to this woman. She sounded exactly like me. She was very rigid. She was talked about the steps. She was very demanding. And it was the first time that I got a sponsor that I thought was pretty much like me. And she had 33 years. She had 30 years in the other fellowship. So I thought she was really the cat's meow. And my recovery began. And the steps were of utmost importance to me. And I chaired meetings, and I worked the steps with my sponsor. And I was at every meeting that I could be at for, I'd say, 2 years of my recovery. I was a very uncomfortable, paranoid person. Here and I did not care and all that stuff. I wasn't comfortable. I managed to become friends with people very easily here. Enmeshment issues followed with sponsees that I had, and thinking that I had to be connected with them all the time, and the sick check really surfaced. And I knew it wasn't good. And I don't, you know, it was 5 years ago or so, so I don't even know exactly what happened. But I do know that I learned about enmeshment. I actually learned about enmeshment in another fellowship with someone from here that said that, you know, the way that they explained it, it just all of a sudden I saw, oh my God, what a huge character defect that is. And so as a result, I've developed boundaries, a lot of boundaries, and I don't get way too connected with anyone. I'm close to a lot of people, but I don't, there's no one that I talk to every single day. For any long periods of time. And I also, when I'm close to people in here, I also make sure that they reach out to other people, because I can be very demanding, and I've been working 5 years on trying to have healthier relationships, and that's happening. I met many people from the rooms, in 2010, so that's how many years ago, 5 years ago, I went to the first conference, and I went to the conference to meet sponsees, and three of my sponsees were at the conference, I was still a very shaky, recovering nicotine addict. At this conference, my sponsees, two of them, were very outgoing and friendly and talking with everyone and making friends, and I was very timid and sat back. And I watched these sponsees, and I was crying. The last day, I was crying because they could just jump in a bunch of people and talk to them and get known and be themselves, and I was a sick pup, and I know that. And well, at the same time, my mom was dying, and so I do always put that in there, because I mean, you know, I worked for a school system and been on boards and blah blah blah, so it's not like my skills were all completely gone, but I was obviously going through a very difficult time. It was an eye-opening experience to be at this conference, meeting people that I had been so close to here, and becoming and being connected with them. And I met Roz at this conference, and John Hippie Dude, who started this program and hippie dude. He was a character, and he was very intelligent. Intelligence is not my strength. And I saw him busting his hump to get Nicotine Anonymous to accept online meetings. And he became an officer, and I watched him. And then next year I went to the conference, and again I met people at the conferences. I went in and sat down at a meeting that they were having, and this woman across the table looked at me. She said, "Chick," and I'm like, "Yeah." She just started crying because I helped her get sober here. I had no idea who she was. But I was touched because she said that I helped her get sober. And my voice just helped her. And I still had a hard time at this conference, too. And because this woman, who was new in recovery, too, could just jump in and help. She got there a day early and was helping. And again, I saw my inabilities and how I just don't know how to jump in. I don't know how to get involved. I don't know how to do it. And I could chair meetings, I could sponsor people, but I just felt so inadequate in so many ways. And I remember someone was speaking Saturday. Someone was speaking on the Saturday, and I was so annoyed with the speaker because I didn't think anything they said had anything to do with nicotine. And I was miserable. And then a couple of the people that were there from our group that I was hanging with, people I was really close to here, and they were saying how they were standing up and fighting for something, that whatever we were talking about, I don't even know, but they got right up there to that microphone and voiced their opinion and blah, blah, blah. Oh, I know, it was about the newcomers booklet and getting it out in print, and they weren't. The people that were there were not happy about how quick it was getting out. And these two girls from Vonar stood up and voiced their opinion. And I, again, was like, I wish they would shut up because they don't know what the hell they're talking about. And I was like so judgmental about what they were saying. And I was like, and I got up and I went to go get a cup of coffee. And I'm like, what am I doing here? I am so antisocial. What am I doing here? And this woman that was getting a cup of coffee, who had just come in, said, "Chick, are you from Bonner?" And I said, "Yes." And she said, "You don't know, you helped me when I go to meetings." And I had no clue who this person was. She told me her nick, and I did remember the nick. I don't ever hear her say anything. But here I am in, I think it was in New Mexico at the time, with all these people that think I'm so helpful, and me putting myself down. And I'm like, I gotta get out of this, I'm a big girl. I'm retired. I was 60 years old. What is my problem? Grow up, girl, And the next day they were taking nominations for people to run for office, and there was no nomination for treasurer, and the only thing I can do is be a treasurer. Math is my strength, and I'm good with money, and I turned to this woman that was from Bonner. I was sitting in between the office manager of Nicotine Anonymous and this other woman that knew me from Vonard that I didn't know. And I said, do you think I could do the treasurer position here? And she said, you certainly can. I said, but, you know, I don't understand any of these, what this all this means. She says, oh, I run a business and I have no clue what they mean. You know, don't worry about it. You know? She said, and she raises her hand and nominates me. or I can't remember. No, she didn't nominate me. She talked me into it. So at this conference, I had changed spot. I had decided to get a different sponsor. So I asked someone else who was at the conference to be my sponsor. And I also was active in a, the person that I asked to be my sponsor was into computers and was showing a new website to people there at a workshop. So I asked, and I was helping. I had brought an extra computer and everything. I had my computer. I brought it down. I had brought an extra one. So I was helping in this workshop. And, I'm a teacher, so I certainly know how to help people in that sense. And I started loosening up, and I started becoming a part of in this meeting, I ended up turning to Roz, because Roz was also in with this computer person, and I asked Roz. I said, you know, I think I need a new sponsor. You know, I said, what do you think if I ask this person? And Roz was like, absolutely, 100%. So, you know, like, I asked Roz her opinion, and I got, you know, I had gone through all the steps with my sponsor, and I really loved my first sponsor, but I just wanted, I felt like I wanted to learn more. I felt like I wanted to, you know, expand more outside of my realm of the 12 steps and the 12 traditions. I wanted a different type of personality that wasn't like me. My first sponsor was just like me. I thought I'd have a better shot at learning some new behaviors if I got a sponsor that was different than I. So here I am at this conference. I'm helping with the typing with a workshop. I'm reaching out to the people in the group. I'm starting to turn some things over. And the next day I did talk to this woman that I asked to be my sponsor and asked her what she thought about me being treasurer. And I talked to John Hippie Dude about it. I just felt like I wanted someone to continue John's work in Nicotine Anonymous and keep computers in online meetings in the known for nicotine recovery. And the next day I was nominated. I also met a guy there. He came in and he was kind of hanging by himself, and I invited him to come sit with me when I was in my uncomfortable phase. Or I was just starting the phase. and someone else had talked with him on Saturday and started, he was thinking about running for treasurer. But he had never been to a conference before. No one knew him. He didn't even go to meetings, you know, but he went to the conference. And I told him, I said, you know, if you want to run, you know, that is fine. You know, they can have an election. But I remember John Hippie Dude talking about when he ran, because John Hippie Dude was chairperson of Nicotine Anonymous during that time. And he ran against someone and lost. And so they made this pact that whoever didn't win would run the next year. And so that's what I said to this guy. So it's been passed down to me. If I don't win, it's no big deal, because I'm, you know, I'm really new about all this stuff. And So as a result, he decided not to run. And I said, oh, you know, I don't want to take this opportunity away from you. He ran a business. He had a business. And I said, if you have business experience, I don't have any business experience. You might be better at this than I could ever be. And he says, no. He says, you, when I got here, I was by myself, and you were the first person that came over and invited me to come sit with you. He said, and you were sitting alone, he says, and you asked me to come sit with you. And you've been here before, he says, a bit more, you have more experience here than I do. And I said, well, please come back next year and run then, which you never did. But, some things started changing with me, you know. And, but I had a reputation here in Vonar of being very mouthy. And, because I just thought, this is the way that you do it. And so I started this fine-tuning business. I figured, okay, if I'm going to be on the board of Nicotine Anonymous, I got to do some major work here. And I can't be on a board and be a jerk. You know, I'm not going to get things. I need to be more open-minded and understanding and all this stuff. In the meantime, this new sponsor that I got was into love and compassion and acceptance. And I'm into acceptance, but love and compassion were not my strengths. So between getting on the board of Nicotine Anonymous and getting this sponsor that talked about love all the time and putting the focus on me and not judging other people, it just... some things started changing. And the first year I was on the board, I was really quiet, as my friend, I think Gary's still here, yep. Gary. The first year, I don't know that I said two words to Gary or anyone else. But the second year, I started being chick and starting it a little bit more secure. And he was kind of dazzled. I remember him saying, wow, you've really changed. You've really come out. And I said, well, I don't know why, but, you know, the bottom line is that I drank for the first part of my life, and I hid behind alcohol, and then I picked up nicotine, and I hid behind nicotine. Nicotine gave me the strength to be me, or to be who I wanted to be. And when I put the nicotine down, I really, really struggled with me and with life. And, you know, during that time, my mom had died, and then I was really on my own in life. I'm not married. I don't have any children. And a lot of stuff just was there. And I thought it was time that, I don't know, I wanted to do some things differently, but I didn't know how. And somehow getting on the stupid board gave me something. I don't know what it gave me, but it gave me an opportunity to meet other nicotine addicts and to be with them for long periods of time and watching them, how they operate in meetings and how they do whatever. And, something miraculous happened to me. And I do have to say that it was triggered from this room right here. Because last January 2014, I had words with someone. And I was so sick of me being me. And I was so sick of flipping my mouth and being so outspoken and having to be right. And I couldn't apologize to that person because it's like, why apologize when you're going to do it again? You know. Saying, before you say anything to anyone, talk to me first. Now that really pissed me off, because that means I can't tell anyone else. Because she was trying to teach me how to do it in a softer, kinder way. And one of my friends that's listening in here today knows, love, patience, tolerance, acceptance. I used to mock it and mock it, and that person has love, patience, tolerance, and acceptance all the time. And somehow we became really close friends in here. With her listening to me and her suggesting to me, now, don't you think it would be nice if you just let this person share at 1 minute after the hour instead of saying that it's time to close the room? They might have something good to offer. And, you know, I hated it. I hate beings, people suggesting what I do, whether it was a sponsor or someone else in the room. So I really have done some big, major work this year. However, I really haven't told anyone off in a very long time, but I still agitate the hell out of people, especially in my face-to-face meetings in the other fellowship. And, you know, people don't understand how much I try to learn how to present myself in a more positive fashion. I shared the other night, I was at a face-to-face meeting, and this guy shared how his sponsor told him, don't say you're trying, just do it. Well, I could cry with that statement because I don't know how to do it. But I have hope. I have a lot of hope that I'm going to get better. I still have difficulty sometimes with people. I think I've become a lot more compassionate and loving and accepting in the last 6 months. But it's not, you know, it's not a perfect thing. I go to a lot of meetings. Still, I feel like I was basically told off at a meeting yesterday, a face-to-face meeting, and I didn't even talk. But this, someone was celebrating, and this newcomer shared how she liked this person and this person and this person, but other people with time think that they know everything and blah, blah, blah. And it was directed at me because there was no one else there with time there. And it broke my heart. It just broke my heart that here at this other woman's anniversary, they have to direct something at me, you know. And I feel broken sometimes. I feel broken because I continue to try to learn how to present stuff. And I still don't. I've been, you know, on the board. I've volunteered to chair a committee. I've been successful there. I also did a lot of work for the board looking for a medium to have meetings online. I volunteered to find that, and I kept on. I actually got the board into using computers more, which is a big, I just know that John Hippie Dude would be so, so happy to see operating in the fashion that they are and using the new stuff that we have to get together so that we bond, even though we're on computers. Now, I knew I could do that because I did it, but people that are not computer people don't know that. And And I volunteered. I volunteered. It must have been in April. I talked to my sponsor, and I've done a lot of work with trying to present myself in a better way. And I said, you know, I really want to try being chairperson of this group. I said, but it is going to be a big challenge for me because everybody knows that my mouth flaps. And I went to every single meeting, and I watched the last chairperson and what he did in his organization. I really am a very organized person work-wise, and so I knew I'd be organized. And I copied things that he put on the board and stuff like that, just so I would learn to present things and not put my two cents in. And I learned in November and December of this year, I almost thought about resigning because I couldn't see me at a business meeting and not voicing my opinion. And as a chairperson, I did not believe that was supposed to be my spot. I'm just supposed to keep order in the room. And I talked with my counselor, actually, about resigning from this position before I got in it. But I've managed to get through 2 months, and I'm looking forward to tomorrow night's meeting. I'm very glad that I don't have to share at all tomorrow night. All I'm going to do is keep order. Get through it. I'm a work in progress. I don't apologize a lot because I'm not thinking that I know is going to happen again. I've gotten to a point of actually this year the closest I've been to really loving myself, which is really big, which is really, really big for me because I came into program with no self-esteem. And I shared about that a lot tonight. And I really believe that smoking, just like drinking, gave me courage. And I so believe in the tools of this program, the meetings, the sponsorship, the reaching out. I've decided this year that it is harder to reach out and ask for help. It's harder for me to reach out and ask for help than it was to stop smoking. And the literature is so very important to me. I don't chair a meeting unless I have a piece of literature. And it's funny because the literature person in Nicotine Anonymous has asked me to bring literature to Von R. I'm like, well, you're going to late on that because I've been doing that for 7 years. reaching out. I don't do anything without talking to someone. I have two people in the room that I consider to be very close friends of mine. And I try to get I'm trying to get along with just about everyone else. I'm getting so much better at reaching out to the newcomer. I feel like I pop in at the end of meetings, just so if there's a newcomer there, I can give them as much information as I can give them. And I know maybe I give too much information. I know other people that chair meetings have thanked me for helping at the end of meetings. I don't do it at the end of every meeting, but when there's a name in the room that's new and I feel like the chairperson is, wants a little bit of help, I try to give as much information as I can. I still consider myself to be, as I tell my story, I consider myself to be a newbie in this. It doesn't matter how I come across to all of you. I am who I am. I have a shirt on that my sponsor sent me that says, it is what it is, and I am who I am. I just want to be able to present myself in a better fashion And I think 12-step program is helping me to learn how to do that. And I feel just very blessed to have 12 steps and 12 traditions to teach me how to be a better person. And with that, it's on the hour, and boy, that hour flew by. Where did it all go? But I just want to thank you all for helping me in my life, and I'll keep coming back. Thanks.